In this episode, we talk about a sensitive issue, as the show's theme circulates around a pro-choice benefit that took place in 1994. While we understand that this relevant topic has many divided over the issue, we felt like it was necessary to speak our minds. This is in no way meant to alienate anybody who may have a specific viewpoint on the subject, but we at Live on Four Legs are adamant on supporting a woman's right to choose, just as the members of Pearl Jam have been for the last three decades. It's always good to keep an open dialogue, as long as it remains constructive and not toxic. With that being said, enjoy the episode. If you'd like to contact the show, send us an email at liveonfourlegspodcast@gmail.com or get involved in the conversation on social media. Join the Pearl Jam Podcast community group on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at liveonfourlegspod.
I was gonna try to keep from doing this because I can't tell you, or we can't tell you not to listen to someone else. You know, if we tell you that, then you might as well not even listen to us. But that's kind of the whole point, is you should be able to make that choice for yourself. And I'm usually pretty good with my temper. We've gotten all better as a band with our tempers. But something about some of these people, man, I really get fed up with these men trying to control women's bodies. And I just feel like they're speaking from a bubble. I don't feel like they're part of, they're separate from what's real. And they're separate from the street. And I want to say that I'm fucking mean, and I'm ugly, and my name is Reality.
And away we go.
You're listening to Live on Four Legs, the live Pearl Jam podcast experience, featuring
Mr. Stone Gossard.
Fucking Cameron in the jump.
Mr. Boom Gasper.
You can call me Al, you can call me Ed, you just fucking call me, why don't you?
Everybody, now welcome to Live on Four Legs, definitive live Pearl Jam podcast. And as we're known to do every now and again, we love to go through Pearl Jam's anniversaries, especially the big milestones. Last year, really at the end of the year, all throughout November and a little bit into December, we talked a lot about 1993 because it was the 30-year anniversary. And believe it or not, since we have turned the calendar, we are now at the 30th anniversary of 1994's tour that happened in March and April of that year. And this is a great tour, very notable from the fact that a lot of things were going on at the time. We talked about that a lot with the 93 shows, that there were things that were happening outside of what was going on stage that were rather important, and that kind of gets transferred over into this run as well. So this kind of begins a little bit of a series. We're breaking it up a little bit, so it's not like every single week is going to be something from 1994. You'll get something different next week, and then we'll kind of go back and forth a little bit. So today we're doing an important one. This is the Rock for Choice show from Pensacola, Florida. And this show was done because a year prior to that date, Dr. David Gunn, who, if you know that name, that was the moniker that Pearl Jam went by for the Slim Show, the David J. Gunn band. He was a doctor at an abortion clinic, and he was murdered a year before the show took place. And this was kind of done in his honor to raise awareness. His son was there, made a big speech. So we're going to be talking about that a lot in this episode. Obviously, it's a big deal. It's something that's followed Pearl Jam around for a very long time. And it's also still relevant 30 years later, maybe even more so. Let's jump right in. Randy Sobel over here, John Farrar over there.
Hello, hello.
Every now and again, we have to kind of dig into something political. And while that's not necessarily why we do the podcast, it is certainly, whenever we do touch on something like this, it's part of their history. And we have to do it because it is important to tell the story of Pearl Jam.
Of course. You know, we always hear those stories. Oh, why can't they just not talk politics, just stick to music? That's just not who they are. I mean, that's not a new thing. Like, this goes back to the very beginning. I mean, this is a Rock for Choice benefit. They're not shy about standing up for the causes that they believe in. And if you're just new to that, then yeah, it's been there the whole time. I mean, that's just who they are.
Yeah, we've seen this from essentially day one in the public.
Yeah.
When they went and they did the performances on SNL in 1992, he had the clothes hanger t-shirt. And then, of course, the writing pro-choice on the arm during MTV Unplugged. This is all stuff that has kind of trickled down all throughout the years, very outspoken for women's rights. And right now, it's a good conversation to have because, again, we see things that are happening with, like, IVs in Alabama. That's ridiculous. And obviously, women have had to flee Texas in order to go get an abortion because their doctors in Texas would have been imprisoned. So the penalties have gotten a lot harsher for this, unfortunately. And it feels like now more than ever is a time where we do continuously have to step up and talk about this and put it to an end. Obviously, it's not ideal what's happening in the way that how the politicians, especially in red states, are running things. And it's a complete disservice to the wonderful women that live in this country. It's a human rights issue. It's a human rights issue. If they can't have their rights, what happens to ours? Everybody. It goes for everyone.
It's sad that this is even more of an issue now in the last couple of years than it was then. You know, back then, you know, Roe versus Wade was still in effect. That felt a little stronger. And the other side is that kind of gotten beaten down. And we saw in the last couple of years that Supreme Court overturned it. So it's a hot button issue. You're going to see it a lot happening this year. I think there was one state, I think Ohio or something, Illinois, maybe some state in the Midwest just put it in their state constitution. So this issue, like 30 years in now, this issue is not going away, and it's going to be a big hot button issue again this year. I mean, we're in election year. It's all around us already.
Yep. Now, let's kind of talk about what all happened, what transpired in this, what got us to March 9th, 1994 in Pensacola, Florida. I'm going to read this excerpt from Spin Magazine from June in 1994 that kind of explains how this concert, this Rock for Choice benefit, all came about. On March 10th, 1993, Dr. Gunn was killed outside a Pensacola clinic by an anti-abortion zealot named Michael Griffin. The shooting galvanized both sides of the abortion debate. Unrepentant pro-lifers such as Rescue America's regional director John Burt, a key figure in ensuing trial of Griffin, condoned the violence, saying that the use of lethal force was justifiable, provided it was carried out for the purpose of defending the lives of unborn children. So, let me get this straight. So, to protect unborn children, because obviously, you want to protect life, you're pro-life. You kill somebody else. You sacrifice somebody else's life in order to do that. Does that make any sense to anybody? I'm just spitfiring here. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't think so. Pro-choicers took the slaying as a final affront to legally guarantee freedoms and emphatically stepped their battle to protect family planning and abortion-related facilities. although a Pensacola jury had found Griffin guilty of murder on Saturday, March 5th, just 4 days before the Pearl Jam and L7 Fall for Now benefit concert, not everyone was satisfied. Well, that's a whole lot right there. That, I mean, it explains everything to where we have gotten to now. And this is on my mind, and I want to rant about this for 2 seconds, but there's a lot of talk from pundits and politicians that go out there on Fox News, Newsmax, whatever they decide to go on, and they love to talk about post-birth abortion. Think about this for a second, guys. Post-birth abortion. They're telling us it's happening. They're lying straight to our face, something that is not possible. Post-birth abortion is fucking murder. It's not existent. Stop listening to them. It's not a true thing. I don't know why that connected with this. It's in the news lately, and I think every time I see it, my blood boils because of how absolutely pathetic even thinking about that is.
Oh, yeah. See, I wasn't aware of this, but I'm looking at it now. It looks like, speaking of Florida, Ron DeSantis had claimed that some liberal states have post-birth abortions. I had never heard that before.
Yeah, because...
I'm not a big Newsmax watcher, as you might have guessed.
You scroll through Twitter sometimes, and you find people that find...
That's another problem. That's another thing you shouldn't be doing.
Well, no, I think it's from more of an awareness standpoint. It's like I'm not following right-wing pundits or anything like that. It's people that want to pass along the news and kind of tell you, hey, people think this way, and it's fucking scary.
Yeah, I mean, the saying is Republicans, they care a lot about baby until it's born, and then it's on its own.
Right. Do we get free childcare so, you know, people can go to work and not have to worry about spending thousands putting their child in daycare when, for the most part, half of it is them getting sick anyway? Something I think about every day. No, they don't put any money into that. They don't care about that. Like, use common sense here. That's what I don't get about all this. And this, of course, turns, unfortunately, into a very political and very religious rant, and it's disappointing that we have to go in this direction and not just say, hey, let's talk about Pearl Jam, but this is kind of the kickoff to the 1994 tour, and a lot of what would happen in this year is the trickle-down effect from what this is. Like, they got death threats before this show. And there's going to be some really messed up storylines that come later in this little run, like people getting into the backstage and trying to rob their backstage, bomb threats being called into arenas, and they couldn't catch a break with any of this, but the whole entire time they stayed their ground, and that's something to admire.
Yeah, I do want to set the scene a little bit. You mentioned it. There's also a Rolling Stone article about this. The quote is that the tension was so great, the promoter had a SWAT team on call to protect the bands. Death threats were said to have been received by Pearl Jam. Members of L7 checked into their hotel to find their rooms littered with religious propaganda, and representatives from the Feminist Majority Foundation were advised by a desk clerk to watch their backs because the hotel was crawling with quote-unquote spies. Not exactly a conducive environment for creativity, end quote. And then it goes on to talk about how there was a massive rainstorm that day, so the protests outside weren't as bad as they were expecting. It said there might have only been a half dozen people by the time the show started, anti-abortion protesters. But yeah, I mean, that kind of gives you a little context as to what was going on around the show. Not exactly the normal Pearl Jam environment that we're gonna get into this year.
No, and I think the band, obviously, when you hear that, hey, death threats have been called in, like, it's alarming. And you get a little bit scared. I'm sure they felt scared. But you know what you're stepping into. You know that there are people that are going to be vehemently against you no matter what. And I think the first moment of this show where Ed sings, "I Won't Back Down," can tell you all of what they're feeling and how they always have stood up for themselves. and what they believe in. You kind of mentioned, so it rained outside and it kind of strayed some of the protesters away, but there were some pamphlets going around that were rather, you know, choice words written there. If you continue on the road you're on, rejecting Jesus Christ, you have a front row seat to the hottest concert in the dark burning eternal hell. When the doors close, you are in forever.
Yeah, it says there's only one pearl worth jamming out for, the pearl of great price.
You know, when we did that episode not long ago where we were just kind of pretending Pearl Jam is a religion.
Yeah.
It was pretending. And that's not to go against anybody. Of course, everybody has their own beliefs. I'm not trying to alienate people on that front. But when this is a hot button issue and lives are at stake, Pearl Jam said how they feel, and I feel like we have to say how we feel as well. So.
Yeah, there's lots of little hints. There's going to be a lot of little subtle things around the show. And one of them is the intro song that they come out to. And I'd never heard them come out to this song before. I had to look it up. It's a song by Suzanne Vega called Tired of Sleeping. And the repeated line is, it's just that there's so much to do and I'm tired of sleeping. I think that was chosen on purpose. Like, there's lots of little things here that when you put it all together and you see it all in the context, like, it makes sense. A lot of this was done on purpose.
I like that idea. And you're right. Little things that they add into the show that show how they're feeling on this night is representative of that. Before getting into the set list, I want to address that this was so weird to put this on the schedule the way it did. Now, there were a couple shows that were supposed to happen in Boulder, Colorado in 1993 that got canceled because of a disagreement with the school. I believe the school thought that the crowd was too rowdy and didn't want moshing and everything like that. And I think that the band just said, all right, well, let's cancel it. And they ended up doing two shows in Denver that happened a couple days before this. So they must have had that schedule planned out and then added the Denver shows in front, meaning the 6th and 7th of March were both of those shows. Now, this seemed like it was probably going to be the original tour open date. It would make sense. So with the Denver show happening on the 7th and this happening on the 9th, you're spending what? The whole entire day on the 8th, driving all the way down from Colorado to Florida?
Oh, yeah, that's 20 hours at least.
What, they arrive like 10 minutes before they were supposed to go on stage?
And not only that, they had to go to Chicago the next night.
Right.
To play Chicago Stadium. And like, I just drove Atlanta to Chicago last summer. That's 12 hours. Pensacola is another 7, that's another 18, 19 hour drive to do in one day.
They must have, after Indifference, just got out of there, jetted, and hope for the best. Hope there was no traffic at all.
Still, no one in their right mind would do Pensacola to Chicago in one day.
All right, why don't we get into the set list right now? So, as you mentioned, the intro music, Suzanne Vega, Tired of Sleeping. So Ed comes out on stage, just him, nobody else, has an electric guitar in hand, and for the first time ever at a Pearl Jam show, borrows one from Tom Petty, I Won't Back Down. No, I won't back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of heaven. I will stand my ground, won't be turned around. I will keep my world from dragging me down. I won't back down. No, I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way. No, I won't back down.
Oh, I know what's right. I got just one life. I will keep this world from pushing me around. I'll stand my ground. No, I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. Hey, I stand my ground, and I won't back down. Hey, baby, there ain't no easy way out. And I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
So I think that this is the most appropriate thing that they could think of to open this night. Pearl Jam has stuff that alludes to, you know, activism and everything like that, but nothing as prominent as the lyrics of I Won't Back Down. And, you know, he's playing that guitar, but this is so light that it almost has an a cappella feel to it. Like he's just singing out to the crowd. And the crowd, yeah, and right away the crowd is just like, whoa, cool. We're getting a Tom Petty song to start a Pearl Jam show. This is awesome. This is different. You hear some people singing along and a lot of cheering. And I don't know about the proximity between Gainesville and Pensacola. They're not very close, but there is a Florida connection there, I suppose.
Sure. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's the other side of the state, but still, I mean,
right.
A couple hours.
He's got to be thinking about that, but the lyrics are just too perfect not to include into what the situation is that they're raising awareness for this night.
Sure. And two, I think this is a message to the people doing the death threats and the religious protesters, like just a direct message to them, like, yeah, we're not backing down. Like knowing that context that we talked about before gives this song even a little more weight to go out and do this, like to say, nope, fuck you. We're here. We're staying.
And something that you notice, because think about it, I Won't Back Down does feel more like a latter day cover of theirs. You know, Ed would come out first before anybody else in the encore. He'd do it just him on electric and sing out to the crowd. You get Fireflies out and everything like that. And when he's done it nowadays, he's never elevated his voice the same way that Petty does. That, hey, baby, he doesn't ever go for it. But hearing that on this, and you don't even think about it after a while, but hearing him do it on this and understanding the weight of the situation, you're just like, yeah, that was meant to happen that way. He was meant to hit that. And it was refreshing to hear him do that. He sounded good all night. And I think that this was a very, very prominent one to open your show. Just as a quick aside, the way that I got to know this cover, it goes back to like the Kazaa days. And whatever, LimeWire, whatever it was, you know, the downloading. And I remember just searching for Pearl Jam stuff. And after a while, I was like, you know what? I want to see what covers they've done. I want to look for Pearl Jam covers of other songs. And you get things that are mislabeled. Like, I remember there was something that was labeled Pearl Jam covers Stone Temple Pilots plush. And I listened to it, and I'm like, yeah, no, that's not Ed. That's not Ed. But I think I found a few of them. I found like Dock of the Bay and, you know, Rockin' in the Free World and Baba here and there. But I definitely found this version of I Won't Back Down, and I've always kind of gravitated towards it. I didn't for a very long time understand where it was coming from, but I kind of knew that it had something heartfelt to it. And as, of course, you dig into the story behind it, you can't get more heartfelt than that.
I mean, yeah, like you said, this is the debut, and it's definitely played with a purpose. And they would do it the next night in Chicago, too, and then they brought it back a couple weeks later. couple of times in Cleveland and Louisville, but then it disappeared until 2003, 2006 a couple of times, then it disappeared again until 2013, and it's kind of been on the upwards trajectory since then. But interesting history with them in this song.
After it's over, you kind of hear Ed say, "You all know why we're here." And that revs you up into a combination of Go and Animal, of course, the first two songs off of Verses. And you can tell all of the animosity is going to come out in the show from those type of songs. Go, Animal, Blood, Porch. You're going to hear Ed peak in just about every song, where it's going to be overmodulated, his voice is going to crack. In just about every song, you're going to get that. And Go, obviously, is going to get into all that. It starts to get really chaotic somewhere in the middle, like the first time where Mike is soloing. It feels like Dave A is really starting to rev things up a little bit. And then, of course, you finish with that little last chorus, and Ed is shrieking into the mic. It feels like he's on a mission with this. And then that ending solo just does the same exact thing. As Mike keeps going, Dave just gradually just raises the bar, and just chops it into the ending, and Ed is just shrieking at the moon on this. This is a really good way to fire them up, of course.
Super noise, like it almost reminded me of like the Jesus Lizard or something. That's just that wall of noise. Like, I don't know what Stone was doing there, but just creating like some weird, like fucked up noises to go underneath. It was very, very cool. But yeah, I mean, coming out with Go to open a show like this after something a little more sing alongy with I Won't Back Down, you know, this very like intense solo performance, and then to have the band come out and just rip into Go, like, must have just been absolutely sending everyone there into a frenzy.
Yeah, and to follow up on Animal too, like that same kind of intensity is brought to the table, and there's something with the solo that sounded really cool and really different too. It's something I know that 1993, we talked about a lot of those versions where Mike was trying to do something new every time where he would go into the solo, and this one kind of starts off like a little low and almost like a little dark, and then gets really finger tap heavy kind of at the end. And I love when Mike is trying new things. Obviously, Animal isn't one of the things that really gets changed a whole lot. If Mike is in a different way, he's like, okay, maybe I'll do this on it. But you kind of know Animal for the solo that it is. It's going to get you riled up each time. But I love the change here, and I think it really worked for the song.
Yeah, Animal really has, I guess swagger is the right word, you know, it means something different now than what it used to be, but it had a lot of like that kind of swinging rhythm to it. You could tell like there was some confidence behind, and that all comes from Stone, like what Stone is doing with that rhythm guitar part. Just felt really like thick and kind of muscular.
Evenflow is going to follow that up, and more and more and more intensity. And you could, like, Mike is a factor in the first four right after I Won't Back Down. And I have to think that that's on purpose that they would do that. It's like, okay, start off with something dedicating the night and then just have Mike bring out that animosity that is all bottling up inside of them. And Ed does his job and the rest of the band does their job. But it's interesting that they did pile up all the mic moments very early.
He's the hometown kid.
That's very true, as we'll find out. Ed asks, so how are you? Mike, the guitar player, how many of you people know that he was born in Pensacola? That's a true story. And every night, me and Mike, we used to room together. He would sit outside the bed mumbling, and I realized that he was thanking God every night that he made it out of Pensacola. If any of you were panicked because you felt like the weather was a sign from above, I wouldn't worry because I think it was there to prevent anybody from protesting outside. So, random act of God when some people think they're doing the Lord's work, and that will get you into dissonant and state of love and trust. How about dissonant, John? What do I always talk about with this song that really disappoints me because they don't usually do it?
When he tries to hit that note at the end?
Bingo. I was waiting for it too, because the first couple songs, again, is really intense and he's going for it at full throttle. So you get dissonant, and why just lay off of that when you already have this momentum going? You know, you could probably count on maybe two hands the amount of times he's actually went for it and sounded awesome. And this one is the first time in a very, very long time where he hits that, and it's just spectacular. No more notes on dissonant. That's all you need from this, and I'm happy with it.
I thought the chorus too, like the instrumental part right before the second verse, I thought was fantastic. You could tell like there was something interesting happening on stage. There was a little bit of a surge there. Like we talk about, like, they're warmed up now, like gotten through kind of the rockers early on. Dissonant's more of like a mid-tempo thing. They can kind of like breathe a little bit. You could tell the band was like locked in on that part. It was a little elevated more than usual.
That's good transferring in state of love and trust. And it's funny because right before they get into it, you hear Mike kind of in the wrong key for state of love and trust. And Ed kind of quips. He's like, hey, Mike, you're in your hometown. You don't want to fuck it up. Big night. They don't forgive you here in Pensacola. And the same thing with state of love and trust as everything else. Like, his mic is peaking and everybody is at full force. And it's just another song that's going to hit you in all the right spots in 1994. And it's funny because you have to look at sort of what they're doing in the set. There's only 13 songs in the main set, but Even Flow and State of Love and Trust are the only two 10-era songs up until the last four. They would kind of plaster you with like Why Go and Jeremy in Black and Alive later, but you know, State of Love and Trust being like one of the 10 songs very early, that's one that people are going to gravitate towards. And again, like everything else, just sounds really intense.
Going right back into a rocker too, it's like going to keep that energy going early on. They definitely came out with a purpose.
So a second of Glorified G is strummed, and Ed says, hey, we're playing Name That Tune, and the two ladies from L7 got it. And that's going to get you into Glorified G and, of course, Daughter, the stand-up bass combination, of course. And Glorified G, while I think it really found its way, it was a little sloppy at first. It gets a little weird. You can't hear Stone at all for the first backing vocals on the first chorus. But then Ed starts to steal the show. unbelievable when you know he's fresh and you know he's belting it like that. That is the best of what he's doing in this era.
Yeah, I can't remember a glorified G that's this intense. Like, when it gets to the steal the heart from your neck, like, it feels like he maybe gonna lay off, but then he kicks in and, like, just starts screaming. Never heard him do that before. It's been few and far between.
Yeah, let's just say he actually steals the heart from your neck in this version. That is something real good. And again, I think, and Ed's kind of saying it afterwards too, about preaching to the converted, talking about a gun in the hands of somebody who shouldn't have one on a night like tonight. I think that kind of ties into everything. Obviously, they're going to play it because it's a prominent song on the new record, but the meaning of it is not lost on this night. Daughter following up is interesting because you start to get into the tag and Ed does his little distorted vocal part that kind of sounds a little more echoey. And then it seemed from the naked ear that he was improvising the line, "You're in my body," over and over and over again. It starts to get really impassioned during this part, but I don't know shit. And there's somebody on the other side of this that knows shit. So, John, please explain.
I know shit about a very specific subgenre of a subgenre, and this just happens to fit into that. So there is a Fugazi song called Reclamation that Pearl Jam has tagged a few times. And I get why no one picked up on this, because the line in Reclamation, he repeats, "Carry my body," but it's like, "Carry my body." And here he's riffing on that line, saying he's changing it to be more about the topic du jour, "You're in my body." You know, he's doing it the same way, and then he ends up with Reclamation, and then he goes back to it again after the WMA lyrics, "All my pieces set me free, Reclamation." Yeah, Reclamation is, I think, a similar kind of a song. The first lyrics are, "These are our demands, we want control of our bodies." So definitely a song that is relevant.
Then you do get a tag that I actually know. As he mentioned, WMA is a song we might have covered in the tag once or twice or 1,000 times. And, you know, it's rare to kind of hear that funk riff on WMA. And when I'm listening to this, I'm like, okay, all right, this can turn into something. And it's essentially almost the whole full song, except for an actual musical part of the "All My Pieces Set Me Free" and on to the end.
Jeff's doing the bass line. Like, that's the thing that's not going to be first. He kicks into that WMA bass line early on, even still when Reclamation is going on.
This is so close to me wanting to say that this is a full performance of WMA. I can't.
Oh, no.
I can't. No. But this is as close as I might have ever heard this get. You get two verses, a full chorus, and then a little bit of kind of jamming and piecing things together at the end. But if they had done something more substantial, I think I would consider that to be a full play, but it's not in this case.
No, definitely.
Police, stop my brother again. Police, stop. very, very good. And as you mentioned, All My Pieces Set Me Free, Human Devices Set Me Free, Reclamation. It says, I was going to try and keep from doing this. That banner should be behind us. It's a good symbol to remember, that Rock for Choice symbol back there. And since the lights are on, let's take the chance to thank every woman from L7 for putting this together a few years ago. So when we get the idea, we can put on the show and not start a whole organization. Everyone worked with us, even the police. I was going to keep from doing this, but we can't tell you not to listen to someone else. If we tell you that, then you might as well not be listening to us. But that's the whole point. You should be able to make that choice for yourself. I'm usually pretty good with my temper, and we've gotten better as a band with tempers, but something about some of these people, man, I'm getting fed up. Getting fed up with all these men trying to control women's bodies. I just feel like they're speaking from a bubble. They are separate from what's real, and they're separate from the street. And I just want to say, I'm mean, I'm ugly, and my name is reality. What does that last part mean to you? Because that feels like one of the more prominent things he's ever said in the show.
Yeah, it's like he's speaking to the other side. It's like you can't live in this fantasy world where these decisions don't affect real people and women in their day-to-day lives. Like, this isn't just like some pie-in-the-sky issue that you can just proselytize on and just not have it affect people. Like, right now in this country, there are women who are affected in their day-to-day life by these decisions. And that's what he's trying to say, is like, don't forget about the very real people who are dealing with this every single day. You can argue about it on both sides, but don't forget that this is really happening right now.
The thing that I don't get is that, in an overall sense, you're fighting for mothers. You're fighting for spouses. You're fighting for sisters, daughters, cousins, aunts, grandmothers. You're fighting for everybody. And, you know, the majority of people that I know, including a lot of people that are pro-life, have mothers, wives, sisters, daughters, aunts, grandmothers. And to me, if they are in a situation like this, that they need help, anything could happen. It could be the worst case scenario. We've seen the ugliest things lead to needing an abortion. Like, things that are unthinkable. And in certain places, they would say that's illegal to have an abortion because of this reason. You guys kind of feel what I'm going for here. And to not stand beside and say, mom, wife, my daughter, that I'm with you, I want to protect your body, to not say that is a false sense of reality. And I don't really know how to explain it to people that don't get it, because I think that they are so far removed from that, that it's not even comprehensible to them. I love the videos sometimes where people go to these anti-abortion rallies and they have these signs that say, you know, adopt, you know, instead of abortion, adopt. And sometimes reporters or comedians will go up to all these women and say, hey, how many kids have you adopted? None. How many kids have you adopted? None. How many kids have you adopted? None. And just over and over again. And I know that there are people that have put their money where their mouth is and have adopted and that are vehemently pro-life. Those people are out there, of course, but a lot of people don't practice what they preach in this sort of muddied battle for our choices. Anyway, to follow that up with blood and come out scorching, this is absolutely one of the most ripping versions ever heard in my life. Ed comes completely unglued. And as he mentioned, I'm usually pretty good with my temper. He loses it here.
talk a lot about intensity and power and force, but there's not a lot of words you can use to describe what's happening in this performance. I think the Rolling Stone article, I think, mentioned too that he's just slamming the mic stand down. I mean, you would have had to have been there to witness like the fury happening on stage. And like, yeah, I'm just kind of at a loss for words. I mean, talk about this stuff all the time, but yeah, one of the most relentless, maniacal, unhinged performances of blood you'll ever hear.
Profound statement, and he puts all of his expressions into that, and I can't think of another blood that is as meaningful as this one and just as intense and can scare you into submission. Okay, well, Wygo's gonna follow that, but I think they need a little bit of downtime before Wygo, so they start kind of getting into a little bit of an improv-y thing, kind of jam a little bit before Dave A just kicks into the intro. And as I mentioned, these last four songs here are all going to be 10 songs. Wygo into Jeremy into Black into Alive. And Wygo is fine right here. It works. You get Mike's solo. You get, again, a lot of that intensity that Ed has been spreading throughout the whole entire show. Finds here too. That's about it. I didn't think that this was a raise the bar version of Wygo at all, but yeah, this is just part of the set that we're in now. Let's dig into Jeremy in Black. I love Jeremy's, where you get no first chorus on it. It feels like it's just transitioning from one to the other. It feels like it has a purpose. It feels like it goes. But not only that, you get the aggressive Daddy Didn't Give Affection line that I absolutely loves. And Jeremy has tons of power, tons of intensity. It's the most popular song at that point. They're still playing it on radio and on MTV 24/7. So this is going to be a good moment for the crowd, and everybody's doing all the call and response stuff.
The ending too, I thought, was just incredible musically. Like Jeff and Dave together, and that's not a partnership that we talk about a lot on here, but really, Jeff especially, just pushing that ending in. This is another one where you get that surge at the end, and they were really putting some force behind it.
Into Black, right away, I thought once they kind of transitioned into the verse, into the lyrics, it felt like Dave came at this really heavy. And then it seemed like as it went on, he kind of softened his touch a little bit, but he was just ready to pound away on this. And I wonder if that ending of Jeremy and kind of being on that tension right there and still having that you didn't realize, okay, with Black, it's not a song for that. Take it down just a little bit. But I do like certain aspects of the song a lot. I love when the chorus, when the music cuts out and they just give it a moment for the crowd to react after Ed is just kind of singing over a little bit that Stone's doing. I love when they do that. It's just a whole dynamic, and it brings the song back, especially the second time they do it when they're about to go into the big moment at the end. It works. It hits really, really well. And Stone's backing vocals are excellent on this. Mike wailing away, and you get like the three-tiered layer here with Ed coming in and doing the Every Breath You Take tag as part of it as well. It sounds really, really good. It's a good version.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, we talk about it almost every week. Just an incredible live song. The Every Breath You Take is interesting. They had started doing that, I think, back in the summer of 93, sprinkling it in a little bit. Definitely adds a different kind of tone to the song more than We Belong Together does. You know, We Belong Together is more the kind of sweeter, you know, romantic version, you know, that you're pining for this lost love. But Every Breath You Take, I mean, people know, like, that's a very ubiquitous song, but as people know, a lot of the meaning is misunderstood. It's a little bit darker than people think, so gives it a little more of a darker tone, especially the way it sings. I thought it was very good. One of the last times they would do it, I think only a few more. And then the We Belong Together would take over again.
Yeah, it does come off as vengeful when he does it. It's like these are lyrics that have kind of cruel intentions in a way. A
little bit more sinister, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when he does that, like, it means he's zeroing in on something very specific. And who knows, maybe it's just something that... It could be all bullshit, and it could be something that Ed is like, hey, this works with this melody, so I'm going to do that here. Not everything has to mean something, right? In this show, you kind of think that, oh, it should mean something, but who knows? Who knows what was going on in their minds? But it works for the situation. It's a good one for the moment. We don't get to talk about it a lot, so very good for the time. Before getting into Alive, Ed says that this song is for David. And when he says that, it's for David Gunn Jr., who we're going to hear from right in the encore break. And yeah, like, this is a 13-song main set. It feels like it's a little short, but it still kind of has all that prompt. Like, when you perform the songs at the highest of highest intensity like this, it doesn't matter how many you play. You're getting their best. And you got to go to where they tap into the solo, and that's when usually you kind of get Mike doing his thing, and then Ed will find a moment, and he'll start doing the Hey Chance and everything like that. But Ed does not give Mike his solo on this. He just starts screaming right away. He starts going at it, and it's really frenzied, and it just sounds like Ferocious Ed needs a couple more punches in there to really get his point across from this night.
Has a howl at the end of his song that's just incredible. Like, how can that voice come out of this person? We don't have video for this, unfortunately, but it almost, like, makes your hair stand up on listen to it on the headphones. Just like, I mean, and again, I'm gonna use the same buzzwords: power, intensity, ferociousness, blah blah blah. But you really have to hear it to feel the full force of it, because it's not something you get on Alive. And very shortly after this, you know, we've talked about how they kind of lost their way with Alive in, you know, 95, 96. wouldn't be the powerful song that it is. But here it definitely had, again, another song that had a little bit more weight behind it due to the circumstances.
Only a couple songs left in the encore, but before we get there, let's pause for station identification and talk a little bit about the things that happen when we pause for station identification. Let's thank two brand new patrons that just joined up this past week. Thank you to David Carrison, and thank you to Danielle Hayes, two brand new patrons. Nice. We appreciate the support so very much. And hopefully you guys out there, as tour time comes closer and closer and closer, it is just about on the doorstep. We're less than 2 months away now, and that might seem like a lot of time, but might not be a lot of time at all. So right now is a really, really good time if you want to support us, if you want to help out what we're doing. And as we've mentioned the last couple weeks, the tour reaction episodes are going to be the thing that we're going to pepper you with come May. And then there'll be some for the European shows. There'll be every show afterwards. We'll have something on. And right now, I just want to ask you guys, because we've been going on social media, I've been doing this, and I've been posting some things. I've tried to get some people together that are going to specific shows, and I've been asking, okay, like, let's get this group together and stuff like that. And really, what's going to end up happening on this tour is that we're trying to kind of put a street team together to help out and kind of spread the word about the instant reaction episodes, because it was really tough. Like last year in Chicago, you know, you got a lot of people that are around you and your friends that want to talk, but you kind of don't have any way to gather other people that are walking around after the show together to be like, hey, we're doing a podcast. Everybody should be involved. And we're thinking about ways to do that this year. And one of the ways is putting together a street team to help out on day of show by going into the merch line. If you're going to be around all day, go into the merch lines, hand out some stickers. If there'll be flyers to hand out flyers, just little things, finding spots to where people are going to meet up and just being a participant of the episodes. Because that's the thing. We just want to get the name out there. Mar has been doing a wonderful job and helping out with some ideas, and she's the captain of the street team, as I like to call her. So we're working with her and we're working on some marketing things and really, really excited for that, which could mean in some specific places we may have some show-specific merchandise, like stickers for now, but could be something else later on. But look out for that. Like, those are going to be things that we want to put out there because we want to get everybody invested as much as possible. The first thing that you want to do after a Pearl Jam show is talk about everything that you just saw. And what better way to do it than talk to everybody that's involved with the podcast, that's listening, that wants to hear what happened with the show. That's your voice. And we need your voice. We can use it. Absolutely. So help with the street team is very much needed. And I know a lot of people have reached out and said that they're interested. And once we get to talking about the shows that you're interested in, we'll start to talk and we'll start to configure some things out. But I'm really excited to be putting this together. And hopefully the idea that we have in mind will all shape together and we'll have a really, really, really good presence on this tour. My fingers are crossed for that. And we're just going to work really, really hard for that moving forward. So talk about support. If you're interested in supporting the podcast, then head on over to patreon.com/liveonfourlegs and sign up. Or if you like apps, then you can download that Patreon app and search for Live on Four Legs. Or if you want to support our website and just give us a hit, then sign up on the website. Go to any page and click that orange Become a Patron button, and you will be in and subscribing on any level, from the dollar tier bonus leg to the $5 tier, the giga leg tier, which will get you an episode request. And look, I have been going through the list. We have time where next year we're probably going to get to a point, if there aren't a lot of episode requests that are going to come in after this, where we might be done. So that's going to be really important. We might ask upon some people that have been longtime bonus leg tier people to pitch one and everything like that. But we're getting close to the bottom of the list now. And if you're listening here and you know that your episode might be coming up, then reach out and I'll let you know. We have scheduled a lot of it, so I'll let you know when that could possibly be. Hook you up and see if you can tell your story and all that. But for anybody new that wants to join on the $5 tier, the Giggle Egg tier, maybe we change that to the Dark Matter tier now? Does that make sense?
We'll have to see if there's a song that sticks out, maybe.
The Wreckage tier. Well, we don't know as of now. There's not been any leaks. We've only heard one song still. It's going to take some time before we do get to hear the full album, or who even knows when the next single is going to come out. It feels like it could be very, very close to happening, but it's based off of nothing but feel and not even with the knowledge of what the next one could be. I feel like it's probably going to be Wreckage, but I have no idea. That's just a guess. But if you are interested in supporting in that fashion, $5 or $10 a month, $10 will also get you an episode request, and you'll be able to come on and do a profile episode all about your Pearl Jam fandom. So that is a lot of fun. We love talking to people to do that. And if you're interested, again, patreon.com/liveonfourlegs. This is a really, really, really good time to get aboard. Coming up probably later this week is going to be one of the last episodes for the late night series featuring their performances on the Colbert Late Show, and hopefully more to come in the future. Javier's still working on that Gear Garage for Dark Matter, and that should be coming real soon too. And I have in the can right now, just waiting to get worked on, a 1993 bootleg episode from the Boys at Hallucinogenic Recipe. So I got to do that. That's got to be some homework for this weekend, but that will be coming at some point too. So a lot of good things to look forward to, and hopefully you guys are all aboard. And once again, we thank everybody for being a part of this. It's very, very important to us. All right, back to the rock. So Ed says, if you guys want to stick around, we'll stick around. It actually gives me a proud opportunity to introduce you to this guy that I think inherited a lot of courage from his father. I'd like you to listen to him for a few minutes, and his name is David Gunn Jr.
Thanks a lot. I want to thank Rock for Choice and the Feminist Majority for allowing all this to go on, because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't all be here tonight. So please clap, give a hand for the Feminist Majority and Rock for Choice. It's really encouraging to see all of you out here tonight support us. We need the help. As you can well see, that the face of the pro-life movement has taken a bad turn. We're faced every day with the prospect of violence perpetrated on us by some protester. You all have the voice. We are the majority. And as long as we stand together, we can take our country back from the zealots who try to take our lives away from us by taking our choices away from us. Nature loves diversity and nature loves choice. We love Pearl Jam. Thanks a lot for having me. Please try to get signed up for the clinic defense training this Saturday. And if you have good intentions, you can join us in Birmingham where we will hope to defeat the siege of Birmingham by Rescue America. Please help. There are people in the front to assist you. There's booths. It's all set up. Thanks a lot for coming out. Have a good show.
So you get to hear from his son. He's in the trenches, he's fighting this, and it's a little bit of like, I got to finish the job that my father started. And I haven't really dug into like where he is now, but hopefully he's still fighting this fight. I would think that this would be his life's work, of course. But yeah, this is super, super, super important for him to come out and say this. And hopefully talking about the clinical defense training and all of that, hopefully got a lot of people to sign up and help, because super, super important.
Yeah, I'm looking to see if I can find out what he's up to now, and it doesn't look like there's really anything. But yeah, I mean, we've seen this. They've had, like, you know, Gloria Steinem come out and talk, and different people. And, you know, whenever you get something like this, it's done to really drive home the point of, like, yes, Pearl Jam got 8,000 people here, but we're going to put this guy out front and be like, this is the real reason why we're here. This is who we want you to listen to.
And Ed is pleading with people, please help out. The last time I remember a band playing a Rock for Choice show is
Fugazi.
Correct. I'll never forget Guy saying that you may be too young to vote, but you're certainly not too young to fuck. And you're not too young to come out and go defend some of these clinics and show your strength, no matter how old you are. Thanks for listening tonight, and I think all of this can make a difference. Going into River Mirror seems kind of appropriate because of some of the themes that are involved with River Mirror. Of course, coming from a female perspective about abuse, and it feels like they were waiting on this moment to bust this out. And I think it's appropriate.
Absolutely. I mean, Whipping was on the set list, and it feels like maybe they just didn't feel comfortable with it enough. More of a new song. Maybe you didn't want to break out some new songs here. But yeah, especially that intro to Rearview Mirror, once it starts, like, takes all that, like, energy in the room and just channels it right into that guitar part. Very, very intense.
That is interesting, because you'd have to think that most of these shows in 1994 are going to have at least, like, a Not For You, a Spin a Black Circle, a Corduroy, right, a Last Exit or something. But right, yeah, there are no Vitalogy songs, no preview of what's to come, no new songs on this show, which yep, I think means that they're keeping the focus on the situation at hand,
right,
instead of the story being, oh, Pearl Jam played a song that nobody heard before.
Yep, they're very aware of what the talking points are going to be, and they put the focus where it belongs.
Of course, the performance is explosive. At this time, the bridge of River Mirror wasn't quite the highlight that it is now, but it's a way of setting up a really revved-up ending, and Mike is especially loud on this. Ed has a good scream, as he's had the good screams all night. One thing I did think of, and this being an early version, is that you notice that at the end of the song, obviously on the recorded studio track, that it's layered. And you have three things going on. You have the continued verse going on, the saw things so much clearer. And then you have the backing lyric to that, that wants you, wants you. And then the other part that doesn't really get inserted live, because you kind of need Ed for the other part to keep that sort of rhythmic vocal going, is the continued scream of the rearview mirror. And that never happens. They never go back to that. So have you ever thought about that before? With live versions, I think it's just so ingrained in us that we kind of forget that that's an interesting part of the song that makes it prominent on the record.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, we always talk about the jam and, you know, does it get quiet? Does it get spacey? Is it more propulsive? Like, that's really what we focus on. But yeah, these early versions, it gives you a chance to kind of think about some different things. Yeah, that's interesting.
I think an attempt every now and again would be cool. And now, Ed can barely scream that, so maybe not. But, like, in 1994, 1993, they probably should have tried it a couple times. Had Jeff do the saw thing so much clearer line or something like that.
I mean, remember just a couple years ago, the song was MIA. We weren't sure if it was coming back at all.
This is true. And I don't think Ed has ever hit that as well as he did at one point in his life. So, but that's how you move forward. And it's still amazing to hear, of course. And here's one that at this time wasn't getting played a whole lot, but it gets played essentially every night now. It's Small Town. And Ed says it's kind of mellow, but you might like it. It is a little bit weird to not get a 1-2-3-4-2-3, because that's so standard with the song. But I kind of like this version, because there's no attempts to have the crowd be a part of it and the crowd doesn't make an attempt to be a part of it. It's just kind of the song at its pure point. And I think it goes to the end when he's just kind of letting it fade out and he's repeating that line, hearts and thoughts, they fade. And he's kind of fading out with that. It feels kind of ominous and feels like he's kind of doing it with a purpose too.
Hearts and thoughts, they fade away. Hearts and thoughts, they fade away. Hearts and thoughts, they fade away. Hearts and thoughts, they fade.
Pensacola is a pretty small town. Makes sense that they would have busted this out. But yeah, I mean, the song doesn't have to be more than it is. I mean, this is only the 15th time they played it. I mean, you compare that to something like Daughter, which is on number 56. Glorified G 46, Animal 53, Go 50, looking at Live Footsteps here. Like, that's not a lot, like a third, a fourth of some of the other songs. So they really didn't find many opportunities to break it out on that Versus tour. But I think this one, again, played for a purpose. You know, it's a song about a woman, first of all, small town. I think maybe they found some relevance in that. So, like you said, it's weird not to hear that the big anthemic version with everything. But yeah, it's kind of a little change of pace there.
So Ed says, if you forget this night, don't worry, I won't. And that's going to take you into Porch. Another that has a connection, of course. It was actually supposed to be Leash here, which I think could have worked as well. Porch, I think, was supposed to come after Alive in the main set. But I think everything was kind of scrunch for time, and I'm sure that band wanted to be out of there. That crew wanted to be out of there as soon as possible to head over
and
to Chicago.
And the speech that they knew that David was going to come out and talk, so that took some time too.
Absolutely, yeah. But this Porch solo is all about what Mike and Dave can do with Controlled Madness. It goes from very flashy to very heavy and almost to a point. And, you know, as Ed would do tearing the Henry Rollins tag, it almost gets a little hardcore in there as well.
I love tearing. We haven't talked about it in forever. But, yeah, I love the tearing tag. Like, yeah, I mean, people know Rollins Band for, like, you know, Liar and Disconnect and stuff like that. But tearing is one of my favorite songs by them. And the way Ed does it here, he's definitely channeling some Rollins on this. It's just super, super furious.
Yeah, he's peaking on that again. Again, he's really, really getting intense. It's his last moment, as Indifference doesn't have an intense moment as the song does. So he's really getting so fierce into the mic that he kind of over screams a little bit and nearly just like a second behind the cue to get into the chorus. That's a really fun version to put a stamp on this show and put a stamp on everything that was happening on this night. It was a great performance.
It's the showstopper.
All right, one more song. They're going to leave. They're going to come back. And we're going to get Indifference. It's a very sparse version. And you get to hear Ed kind of flub a line, I think, that he does the first two verses. And then when he gets to the part where he's supposed to scream out to fill this room, that he's going back to "I will hold the candle," and he catches himself and he kind of waits a little bit. And it feels like when he comes back into that, it might be like a measure or so off or something like that. But then he goes into the big line and that's the climax of the song and just kind of waits a few beats before filling the room. And that's how you're going to end this night.
I was so distracted by Dave's over-the-top cymbal washes that I almost couldn't pay attention to anything else. Like, he is doing like 10-second cymbal washes on this thing. That's when you just kind of like just barely rattle the cymbal to kind of give it that noisy effect. And like, oh, it's just very over the top. And like every chance he gets, he's going for that thing.
Yeah, that's, again, you go and later in this little run of 1994, we are going to do the Paramount Theater show, which would be Dave A's last ever Pearl Jam show. And that will have a lot of conversation about why. Why did Dave not continue with this band? And I think it was maybe for moments like this where they were a little bit on different sides, where they wanted to kind of key into something a little more sparse and didn't want a little flashy thing to kind of take over the song. Mm-hmm. And his presence is meant to take over songs. He's meant to be heard. While he does such a great job sometimes with honing that in, it's kind of like his strengths are sort of turned into a weakness for the band almost. And while it's just such a little thing, but these little things do add up and feel like they could be part of what the band would evolve into that they didn't want to have as they went through and did Vitalogy and onward. So things that we'll get into much more conversations about in April or so. So a little tee into that because, of course, it's part of the era. All right. Some moments need to be relived here. And there are a lot of very, very good ones. So it's tough to pick a three. It really is. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to go back to Porch because Porch was excellent here. I'm going to say my number three is Porch. And then I have kind of like a, you know, either of them can be number one or number two. It really doesn't matter. I'm going to go with the most inspiring moment as the number one. I'm going to say Blood is number two. But the big takeaway from the show performance-wise is the opener of I Won't Back Down. So that's number one for me.
Yeah, right on. My number three is Porch as well. My number two is Daughter. And my number one is Blood.
There we go. All right. This is an interesting rating to put on this because we're rating this, you know, based off of a show, but also based off of kind of its importance in the catalog. And there will be more shows that are like this where they'll stand up for things that they believe in. And this is an early indication. They did it a couple times in 1992 as well. And I think it is important. And I think the show totally proves what they're trying to put out there. And emotionally, it channels what the band is thinking. The only thing is, I just don't think it is part of the upper echelon of Pearl Jam shows. People don't really play this a whole lot. They talk about the I Won't Back Down moment, but I think that just loses half a point for me. And instead of giving it a 10, I think I'm gonna go with a 9.5 on this because a lot of the performances were very much indicative of what 1994 was. And the idea of the show and the theme of the show is important in and of itself. So that gets a 9.5.
Yeah, I think I'm in agreement there. I think it's just below that epic classic tier that we sometimes get to. I mean, maybe you throw in a couple of Vitalogy songs, maybe something like that. But As far as like performances go, the spring 94 tour, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. The floor is very high on these shows. So yeah, I'm right there with you, 9.5.
All right. So that's our first of 1994. We're going to be back and forth with this for the next month or so. And we'll kind of cut in with some Patreon requests a little bit. And that's what we're going to do next week. We are going to do a Patreon request that'll take us back to 1992. So we're kind of going backwards. It feels like we did a little while where we were going forwards, where we were doing like a 2003, then a 2006, yeah, then a 2010 or something like that. But we're going to go backwards and kind of go back to not the beginning, but sort of the elevated beginning. Because if you remember back in March of, I think, 2022, although I could be wrong. Yeah, it was 2022 because 20-year anniversary, again, going back to that, we did a little series featuring the Netherlands shows from early March of 92 that were really important, like Rotterdam, Den Haag, Utrecht, all important shows in an important period of time. And then we ended that little series by doing MTV Unplugged. This was a show that we didn't do that was right in the middle. And this is a request from our patron Balk. And he wanted to hear Eindhoven from 1992. So we'll dig into that. It's a shorter set. But again, there's a lot to talk about when it comes to this era. And we're going to get an interesting closer. We're going to get an interesting set. So I'm excited to kind of dig into it. It's a good era. And the band was feeling really good at this time. And they loved being in Holland and in the Netherlands at this point in time. So yeah, I think we're going to dig into something really cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first 90s show of the year that we've done, and we're going to be on a little run of 5 out of 6 here, so it's going to be fun.
Hopefully you guys like the 90s. All right, well, thank you all for listening in. This was a fun episode to do, even though we had to talk about some tough subjects. And, you know, if that bothers some people, then fully understand. And we don't do it every week, of course, but again, it's part of the band's history. And hopefully, at least you had an open mind coming into it. And, you know, hopefully we don't get screamed at on social media. We almost never do. But, you know, as long as everybody's cool, we're cool. So, yeah, that's it. Well, if you are subscribed to this podcast, then hopefully you're subscribed on either Apple or Spotify. Honestly, we're happy if you're subscribed anywhere. If you're listening, then that's cool with us. Especially YouTube, too, because our YouTube seems to be blowing up lately. It seems we're getting a couple new subscribers every day, a couple new comments every day. So, yeah, guys, if you're not following the YouTube yet, make sure you are, because it's happening, and maybe that'll make us want to do more on YouTube a little bit. But if you're not subscribed, make sure that you head on over to any of those platforms that I mentioned and do so. And then if you're there and can see that you can give us a rating, hopefully we have earned the 5-star rating and we can earn your respect on that. And that just kind of helps when people are looking at a podcast and saying, you know what, this got good reviews, so I want to listen to something with good reviews. And what goes along with that as well, comments. On Apple Podcasts, you can leave us a comment, say something nice, I hope, and talk about maybe a show that we covered that you went to and how we covered it and something like that. Just for the next person that knows, can understand what this podcast is, we can mention it until we're blue in the face, but, you know, it's all word of mouth. And once the tour comes along in 2 months, that word of mouth is going to spread even more. So it's a good time to be talking about it. It's a good time to talk about Pearl Jam. So here we are. Let's just keep going with it. All right, let's close this one on out. This may be the end. We're here, but not for much longer. And although we may be parting ways, miss you already, miss you always. Back to the past for next week. 1992. See you on the pod.
They don't forgive you in Pensacola.
Are we going to protect life? Yeah. Let's protect life. Let's do it. Woo! Here we go. Let's save the baby.
Woo! Save the baby.
Yeah.
How you doing? Good to see you.
1, 2, 3, life! 1, 2, 3, life!
So we're seeing lots of people. Some people are singing here. Wow, lots of singing going on. And I saw the sign, choose adoption. And how many children have you adopted?
Not able to adopt. I'd love to adopt. We weren't able to adopt.
Oh, gotcha. And how many children have you adopted?
None.
None.
Okay. This is a win-win mess. Yeah.
And how many children have you adopted?
None.
And how many children have you adopted?
I have two of my own.
Yeah. But so you've adopted?
I have two of my own.
But you haven't adopted any.
No.
Nope. Okay.
It's just the message.
Okay. Exactly. So there you have it. You have the option to choose adoption. These women, they're not going to be the ones to adopt you, unfortunately. Yeah. There is a lot of death in the Bible, right? Like, God does kill a lot of people in the Bible, right?
Yeah. Like, death is a part of life, yes.
Yeah. But he actually, like, murders people with plagues. And I think it was 2 Kings, he drops a wall on 27,000 Syrians.
Plenty of evidence in the Bible that supports that we need to love our neighbor and protect innocent people.
If you look at the Bible, God killed like 2.1 million people. Satan only killed 10 people. So isn't Satan a little more pro-life than God?
No.
No?
No.
What message would you have to women who are considering having an abortion?
When a woman becomes pregnant, there's two bodies there. It's not one. And it's not my body, my choice. It's care for the child. There's adoption. There's other routes to go.
And what do you say to people out there that say that they don't want to get the COVID vaccine?
If the my body, my choice works for abortion, why doesn't the same work for the vaccine? If it's my body, it should be my choice of whether or not I want to vaccinate.
And so how many children have you adopted?
I don't have any children that I've adopted, so...
How many of those children are adopted?
None.
Well, how many children have you adopted?
We have four. We have no adopters. We have no.
Oh, you haven't.
We have a family of seven.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. So you guys are just having children.
Yep.
Amazing. Not adopting the others. Okay, well, we are here at the March for Life. 50,000 to 100,000 people. A lot of them want other people, you know, to have children. They don't want to help.